If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, his name is Finn Martin. Ladies and gentlemen, no matter what happens in the world, no matter what goes on, what travesties, what apocalypse, what pandemics happen, there are three things that will be left at the end. Cockroaches, Cher, and the Power Slam podcast. Finn, how are you?
Fantastic, and you're right. We'll still be here, along with cockroaches and Cher. We'll probably have a police cone on our head.
By that point, you would hope so. But we are here to provide the escapism, to provide the relief from the day-to-day isolation that everybody's going through. We hope you're all coping. And, you know, I know for me anyway, like my other half, Steve Gunn, you know, he moved up to Glasgow last month. And I was talking to him last night and I said, do you realise that for probably the next 3 months minimum, our main social interactions are going to be with each other? So we're going to know at the end of this 12 weeks whether this is a good idea to continue this relationship or not. So,
well, you are.
So I'm going to know.
I mean, you do feel sorry, for all the couples out there that can't really stand each other and now are going to have to like put up with each other for 12 weeks.
Well, and there's all, I mean, the amount of you know, arguments that are going to come up just over the what program are we watching debate that's going to reign supreme now, because, you know, and there's, I mean, you know, as we record this on Tuesday, the 24th of March, Disney Plus has launched in the UK.
Yes.
Today, I got my membership last night, did the $49.99 for 1 year package. Because I knew I'd have some time in my hands. So yes, there's that. There's Netflix, there's Prime, there's the WWE Network, which is now, if you don't subscribe to the network, they've now made a lot of the stuff on the network free for the next little while.
WrestleManias are free, aren't they?
Yeah, WrestleManias, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and a bunch of, like, I think it's like WWE Untold, Monday Night Wars. So a bunch of stuff out there for people to check out. So, I mean, before we kind of get going about current topics and everything that's going on, because there's so much going on, we put a video up on our YouTube channel last night, cheap plug, youtube.com/insidetheropes, and it was of basically 20 years ago this week, 15 years ago, 16 years ago this week, I'll finally get it right, 16 years ago this week, at WrestleMania 20, Goldberg faced off against Brock Lesnar with Stone Cold Steve Austin as the guest referee. In the clip, you know, we asked Goldberg about that match and he kind of says, you know, they had to do what they had to do. Goldberg famously leaving the company, and people find out Lesnar is during that week. Talk to me about your memories of that, because it was a big match. It was in some ways, like a dream match. They built it up from the previous November at Survivor Series, and it became, I mean, a colossal flop of a match that is still a bizarre thing to go back and watch. What are your memories of covering that at the time and the moving parts to it?
It was definitely a very strange match and seemed really as a disappointment, because it was like this, you know, ultimate battle of the Titans, you know, like, Austin versus Hogan in their primes. It was like these, even though, you know, you could say Goldberg was kind of past his prime, he was still fairly young at that point. What would he have been then? He was born in 66, wasn't he? So he would have been
38, 37.
Yeah. I mean, he was still good to go. I mean, he was younger then than Brock Lesnar is now. So, I mean, I remember the story at the time was, it was such a fast-moving story going into WrestleMania regarding Brock Lesnar, and most of us couldn't really work out what was true and wasn't, because there's all these stories coming out about Lesnar wanting to leave. He'd famously signed a long-term contract, I think it was the previous year, and then suddenly announced to Vince McMahon prior to the WrestleMania 2020 press conference that he was leaving because he wanted to be a football player. And I think, well, is this some sort of rib or is this a joke? Why would he want to do this? You know, when he'd been obviously a wrestler in college. I think he had played football when he was in high school, but it was not something that he was really proficient in. So it's like, well, why is he doing this? You know, what's his goal here? I mean, what's the angle? Does he want more money? Does he want to reduce schedule? And I think a lot of us were kind of astounded, really, by these details. And WWE at the time was kind of trying to suppress the story. Didn't really want it getting out that Lesnar was leaving because they knew what that could mean to the match with Goldberg. And also, I think they were maybe trying to dissuade Lesnar from leaving. And maybe just thinking that, oh, you know, he'll calm down. You know, it's just a phase he's going through. If we give him a little bit of time off, then he'll change his mind, he'll reconsider, and he'll commit towards the contract. And, you know, I think they were paying about $1 million a year downside guarantee at the time. And he was obviously making more than that on top of the downside. So I think there was a lot of efforts made. They were striving to keep him on. And then they finally realized that he was serious. Because, I mean, as we know now, Lesnar is a headstrong character. We all know that now. We weren't quite as sure about that back then, you know, in 2004, because he was still fairly young. What would he have been, 26, 27 then? I think he was born in 77.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because he was the youngest to win the world title in 02 against The Rock at SummerSlam. So yeah, 04 would have made him about 27, I think.
Yeah, so he was still fairly young and hadn't really been around, you know, hadn't even been on the main roster. Well, it was like 2 years. He'd come in in March 2002. So he'd been on the main roster for 2 years, coming off that amazing feud and match with Eddie Guerrero at the No Way Out event, wasn't it, in February of 2004. Mm-hmm. And he was really getting the whole personality and character aspect of it down. And that had become clear during the feud with Kurt Angle the previous summer, where he was really growing in confidence and able to do the character stuff as well, and really not afraid to send himself up and have fun with it. And that was very obvious in the whole Guerrero feud. So it just seemed to me that here's a guy, he can do it in the ring, he can do it out of the ring. They're paying him all this money. He's got this long-term contract. We were really excited to see what he was going to do in the post-WrestleMania 20 season, because, I mean, he was key to everything, especially on the SmackDown brand. And then suddenly this announcement that he's going to become a football player. To me, it just sort of seemed like a bit of a joke at the time. Obviously, it wasn't. He did do it. Went into WrestleMania 20. By then, they'd been unable to contain the story. Everyone knew that he was going. Everyone knew Goldberg was going because he'd only signed the one-year contract. He'd been bloody miserable there for months and couldn't wait to leave. So, I mean, it was just like, in many ways, you know, it was like the perfect storm. A lot of people use the phrase perfect storm to describe something great. But perfect storm, as I understand it, is something that's catastrophic. That's what I understand the perfect storm to mean. You know?
There's a movie after it.
Well, absolutely, yeah. It's something utterly catastrophic, you know, cataclysmic, everything, just a total, in-ring apocalypse. And that's what that match was, just an utter disaster. Because you got two people who are leaving, two people that are highly paid, two people that the audience have decided that they're going to resent. We've got Shane McMahon in the audience cheerleading, blasting the guys. I'm not saying that he was responsible for this. It would have happened anyway. But the fans knew those guys were leaving and they were going to give them as tough a time as possible. It was that New York crowd. I mean, remember going back to Survivor Series 1996, a lot of people were really shocked by the reaction to Sid versus Shawn Michaels, where people were booing Shawn Michaels and cheering Sid, because Sid was the heel and Shawn was the babyface. And that New York is very much that New York audience. Obviously, people had access to far more information by 2004. The internet was a huge force. People who would buy tickets to WrestleMania, most of them are going to be following wrestling closely beyond what's transmitted on their TV screens. So people knew what was going on. They knew these guys were going. And it was as if it was this sort of mission to just ruin it. And they did. The audience absolutely ruined it. The two guys clearly didn't want to be there. Obviously, they didn't because they were both leaving. And they didn't really try very hard on the night, I felt. I mean, I don't know whether it would have worked even if he had. It wouldn't have done, probably. Steve Austin's in there. He was kind of chuckling at times, but I'm sure Austin's thinking, my God, you know, kind of a little bit like when The Rock was in the ring with Roman Reigns. Rumble 2015, where Rock's thinking, you know, Dwayne Johnson's like, what am I doing here? This was not a good decision. You know, people are not supposed to boo me. They're supposed to cheer me unconditional love. That's that, what I deserve.
That facial expression from The Rock, I'll never forget it. Like, yeah. He just had no idea what he was letting himself in for.
Oh, I mean, Austin, I think he expected it. I think he anticipated it because he was obviously keenly aware of developments and, you know, a very savvy guy when it comes to audiences and, you know, really good guy when it comes to turning audiences as well. But there was nothing he could do on the night. He was just like a spectator and he was probably couldn't wait for the whole thing to be over. But, yeah, just an absolute comedy of a match. But it was the circumstances that led to it. And I think it was kind of unavoidable, really. If could have kept a lid on the story, maybe the match would have worked and the audience would have been with them. But it was impossible by 2004 to keep these things hush-hush. Because the internet was, you know, such a force and basically everyone who wanted to be was on the internet by then.
Yeah, I was there in Madison Square Garden for that match, and it was crazy because I knew Goldberg was leaving through. I would read Power Slam magazine, which kept me up to date, Finn, with all the goings on in wrestling. So I knew.
Oh yeah, I remember that magazine. Yeah, it's pretty good, wasn't it?
It was all right. But I knew because you. I'm sure you had reported by about January that Goldberg was not going to re-sign. He was not interested. So it was fairly public knowledge. Whatever you read in the internet or picked up a magazine, that you know, you would know that information. And then the Brock stuff, I'm pretty sure that I remember hearing about it midweek of Mania week, so maybe like Wednesday, Thursday. It was fairly late that it came out.
Yes.
And I remember because I remember just thinking, who are they going to have win if they're both leaving? Like if they're both leaving, I can't see. But then of course they had Austin basically stunner both of them, and then the kicker to that is that Austin then left as well. So
he did.
So the whole thing was useless. But you know, since we last spoke last week, you know, you would think with everything that's going on in the world with coronavirus and all that kind of stuff that there would be less wrestling news. Unfortunately not. There's more wrestling news.
Fortunately, Kenny.
Fortunately, more stuff for us to talk about, more stuff for people to consume.
Digest.
And the big news, obviously, since we spoke last week, is that WrestleMania will be going ahead as a two-night event.
Too big for one night, Kenny. That's the reason.
Sure. Okay, we'll go with that. Too big for one night. It's going to be the Saturday and Sunday, and they're splitting over two nights. I guess my question to you is, I asked you last week, you know, what do you think about them going ahead with it? And, you know, we kind of ponder those different scenarios. What do you make of the idea of doing it over two nights? Do you think that that is going to make it any easier for fans to digest watching it? And what do you kind of, you know, we're now 10 days out. We're 12 days away from 11 days away from WrestleMania because I guess it starts next Saturday. But sure. When you're online, when you're talking to people, when you're reading things, what do you get as the vibe? Do you think people are excited about WrestleMania? Do they want to see it? Are they happy it's going ahead? And how do you feel about it?
I think there's a mixed response. I think everyone's really kind of shell-shocked at the moment about recent developments, which are... Obviously, we had a huge announcement last night from the Prime Minister on UK effectively going into lockdown. So, I mean, there's so many other things on at the moment that I don't think WrestleMania taking place over two nights is at the top of our list of priorities. I think, like you said at the start of this podcast, to me, it's providing escapist entertainment, just like you signing up for the Disney streaming service is providing people with a, you know, welcome... from what's going on in everyday life. And I think WrestleMania, I'm pleased it's going ahead when it's going ahead because if they did postpone it, as I said last week, I don't think they could have presented the same matches. And then what did they do with the post-WrestleMania period in terms of storylines? I think they're going to continue doing programming after WrestleMania, and they'll have to move on and try and get back into the normal sort of rhythm of using the full-time crew rather than the part-timers who'll be leaving after a week on Sunday. So, I mean, to me, I'm not really... When it comes to people's reaction to it, my response to their reactions is, well, you know, just be glad that it's taking place. You know, that would be my advice to people, who anyone who's complaining about it, saying, oh, it shouldn't happen. Well, I think it needs to. It needs to happen then, because otherwise, how can they promote those matches in July or August or September? They won't be able to do that. And what would they do in the interim with the storylines? I mean, if Raw and SmackDown and NXT are continuing on a weekly basis, which it seems they will, they've got to then do something else after WrestleMania, or after the dates when WrestleMania was supposed to take place. So I think it would just get very confusing if they were to try and put it off. So I think they do need to do it. And I think it's, you know, it's welcome that it's taking place and it's providing some entertainment for us at this very difficult time in our lives. I mean, I know you can say, well, there's lots of other stuff going on, and of course there is. But I think everything that's going on, I think it should take place. I'm glad it's taking place. I'm glad these matches are going to occur. And then hopefully, well, you know, those part-timers will then disappear and go back to their normal lives. And then WWE will try and create a new normal, you know, because this is the new normal, isn't it? Where we're at now is a new normal, but normal's changing each day. But WWE is going to have to try and come up with a plan for what it's going to be doing on a week-to-week basis. And is it going to do monthly pay-per-views after WrestleMania? I mean, I would assume it is. Otherwise, potentially lots of people might unsubscribe from the network, which is going to be a massive loss of revenue for WWE, which they're not going to want. That's not a hit they're going to want to take on top of everything else. So I think they're going to try and get back to some sort of sense of normality, given circumstances they're currently having to deal with post-WrestleMania. But I mean, yeah, it needs to take place over two nights. I think that's the right decision as well, because if they present like a 7-hour show on one night with no fans present, that is going to be that's going to be very difficult to sit through. It's going to be really tough. I mean, as we've seen on Raw and SmackDown and NXT over the last week to 10 days, they're running some live matches. Obviously, they didn't on NXT last week. It was all like kind of like a recap show. But on Raw and SmackDown, they've done some matches live without fans, but they've also been including matches previously broadcast with an audience. So I don't think they really want to present a full episode of Raw or SmackDown with matches from an empty arena. They're padding it out, they're fortifying it with matches, the, you know, vintage matches that were held before an audience. So I think to try and do a 7 or 7 hour plus WrestleMania on one night, match after match before an empty performance center, I just think that would be really tough to watch. But splitting it into like hopefully two shows that are really no more than 3 hours each, maybe 3 hours 20, three and a half hours each, I think it will be a lot easier to enjoy it. I mean, I don't know whether we are going to enjoy it, but I think it will be easier for us to consume it in that format than if it were all to take place on one day or one night, you know, a big 7-hour show with no fans present. So I think they're doing the right thing. I think they have to do this. I don't think it would work as a 7-hour show with no fans. What do you think, Kenny?
I mean, I get why they're doing it. I also get why people are concerned about it. Like, you know, I feel very bad for Drew because I don't think the win's going to mean as much as it would have in front of an audience. But I think what they're going to have to do is get really creative with how they're going to do this. I mean, the thing I wanted to ask you about was, obviously, last week with AEW Dynamite on Wednesday, when they held it at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, you know, the fan response to that show was so much better because they had, you know, no empty seats. They had baby faces on one side of the ring, heels on the other. Those people kind of were, you know, either being the fans and shouting for the matches, or they were involved in the storylines, and the hard cam faced, you know, the ramp and the big screen. So you never really got, there was points where you kind of forgot that you were watching an empty arena show. And I think after watching Raw and SmackDown, where they had really not adapted in any way to the fact that it was empty arena, and, you know, whether it's Austin panning to a crowd that's not there or whatever, or Daniel Bryan last week, you know, doing yes chants when there's nobody in the building, you know, that all felt very forced and it didn't feel that they'd adapted. So my question to you was, I mean, we saw on Raw last night, they've changed the hard cam, they've got rid of the seats, they've reacted to what AEW did last Wednesday. So my question to you was going to be, do you think that that is something that they need to implement and maybe go a step further and have wrestlers at ringside to give the show a bit more of an exciting feel?
Yeah, I mean, the AEW did that. I mean, I think it was Jim... I'm sure AEW had thought about this or considered this before Jim Cornette suggested it. I know he suggested something like this on his podcast, and they implemented that idea. I'm not suggesting that it was Cornette's idea that they implemented, but they went with an idea that Cornette had stated on his podcast. And I thought it did work better, certainly with them darkening the arena so you couldn't see all the empty seats, which was something that many promotions did back, you know, the 70s and the 80s and even into the 90s, which was a tactic they used, in just because if they couldn't make it, so there's nothing worse than seeing empty seats on camera. I mean, it just looks bad. It makes it look like it's a promotion that's cold, that people aren't interested in before. So, I mean, that was something that, you know, Bill Watts famously did that when he was in WCW in 92, early 1993, and he needed to because attendance went through the floor when he was in charge of WCW. So that's something that I think WWE could implement as well. As far as placing staff members or fellow wrestlers or people from the back at ringside to make some noise, yeah, I'm all for that. I mean, I think it's something they should do. I'm not quite sure why they haven't done that yet. I mean, you observe social distancing, put them in seats at least 6 feet apart. You're then doing everything that the World Health Organization is suggesting you do. You're not contravening any of their suggestions or any of their guidance on preventing further transmission of the coronavirus. So you are covering yourself, and you're also looking after the people, your audience. You're looking after them as well, and you're acting in their best interests. So there's no reason why they can't do that. I'm not sure why they haven't done that yet. I mean, some noise is better than no noise. So yeah, they need to get, if they can get like 30 or 40 people in that audience and just darken, you know, turn the lights down. You know, we don't need to see empty seats. Get some noise there. People are going to react in the right way because these are paid employees / independent contractor WWE. So people are going to say and cheer the right things, and could in many ways be an improvement on certainly Roman Reigns versus Bill Goldberg, which I think was a match that was going to really struggle before an audience. If you get effectively 40 or 50 plants in the audience that are going to react in exactly the way they should, could actually be a better atmosphere than it would have been had Goldberg versus Roman Reigns taken place at Raymond James Stadium.
I mean, the thing that's mad is that, you know, WWE obviously would have fans in there if they could. Like, yes. You know, there's no way they don't want that. And I think that the limit of people right now, in Florida, for example, is 10. It's 10 people per time or sort of like 15. It was very, very small. And to me, the thing that you're kind of missing in WWE is that, like, if you had, you know, say you have Rhea Ripley and Charlotte at WrestleMania. I think that's on night one. I could be wrong. Say it's on night one. There's no reason why you shouldn't have Bayley and Sasha sitting out there as the heels, you know, surveying that because the next night they're going to be in the six-pack challenge for the women's title. There's no reason you couldn't have Ric Flair at rings or whoever. You know, you have various people who mean something to each person, and then all of a sudden the people on the outside will be making noise because they definitely want somebody to win, and then you can kind of make stories out of that. And it just, to me... I never really thought of it before I watched the AEW show, but once I watched the AEW show, it just became so glaringly obvious that that is the way to do it. If that's all that you could, you know, if that's all you can do. You know, I said it with Sondra, it's like, if you have Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins on night one, why would you not have, you know, Roman Reigns sitting there on the babyface side? You know, he's getting ready for his big match tomorrow night against Goldberg. He's sitting here, you know, surveying his former Shield brethren, Seth Rollins, taking on Kevin Owens. You could have Sami Zayn on the heel side because he used to be, you know, tie people in that used to be involved with the wrestlers in the ring. And it, to me, that would just, that's what they need to do. I know that they've done the hard cam thing this week, which is good. It's a start. But, you know, for WrestleMania, especially if it's going to be a 3.5 hour show, even Raw last night, I mean, Raw last night had, what, maybe like 55 minutes of original content, and the rest was kind of video packages and old matches and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm curious to see what they're going to do, but to me it's, I know what you're saying, I agree with you about the idea. I think we all actually need a WrestleMania. I think we all want one, but I still think there's just, there's very easy things that they could do to adapt this WrestleMania to make it feel really special, and I just hope they kind of pull those triggers on that so that it feels like a unique event that we'll look back on fondly, as opposed to going, oh, that was such a missed opportunity because they didn't do this and this and this.
Exactly, and by placing, you know, the talent in hands in the crowd for, or in the seats for these matches, you could set up most of your post-WrestleMania feuds, or many of them. Lots of things you can do there to make this work. Mm-hmm. And why not just get the ball rolling at WrestleMania for what's going to be happening after WrestleMania? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, we know lots of feuds because there's so many veterans on this show that won't be there the day after WrestleMania or the day after WrestleMania Sunday. Lots of new things are going to have to be originated on Raw and SmackDown the next week. So why not get the ball rolling on them at over the two-show WrestleMania event? It seems pretty obvious to me that that would be beneficial advice for everyone.
Makes sense to me. Well, before we talk about SmackDown and Raw, because we'll kind of finish out talking about those, you know, I mentioned AEW, they did Dynamite last week. It was very well received, given the changes that, or, you know, the things that they implemented that you mentioned. And the two big things coming out of that show were the debut of Brody Lee, former Luke Harper, as the Exalted One, and the debut of Matt Hardy as Broken Matt Hardy, the now fifth member of Team Elite, for the eventual Blood and Guts match. What did you make of it? I mean, it's almost heartbreaking to watch those debuts, because if those debuts had been able to go ahead as scheduled in Rochester, New York, where they had sold over 5,000 tickets, that would have been great. It would have been really, you know, a huge moment for both of them, but they had to do it in the, you know, weird environment that they did, but, they, you know, fair play, they did it anyway. What did you think of the two debuts?
Yeah, I mean, in the environment, I mean, it's just like everyone's in the same boat right now, aren't they? So, I mean, it's just wrestling, most wrestling promotions, at least the wrestling promotions with TV contracts, are having to continue to produce output each week, which means that they are going to continue to have to book matches and storylines and angles and just and debuts. And it's not an ideal environment in which, you know, Brody Lee and Matt Hardy could debut for AEW. But, I mean, we don't know how long it's going to be before fans are going to be allowed to attend events. And it, you know, it's just like the WrestleMania thing. It's like, oh, postpone WrestleMania. Well, for how long? We don't know when fans are going to be admitted to venues again. You can't put this off. And the same applied to Matt Hardy and Brody Lee. I mean, these are two guys that are itching to become players in AEW. The way in which they were presented on Dynamite last week tells us very clearly that these two are going to be a big part of that promotion in the future. So they had to do it. Yeah, you're right. It would have been great if the audience was there roaring its approval. But what they did do, I think, was as good as it could have been given the circumstances the entire world, or at least most of the world anyway, is now facing. So, yeah, Brody Lee, he was unveiled as the Exalted One in a video, so I thought that was well done. His voice was disguised at the start, and then they removed the voice distortion technology so we could hear that it was him. So I think a lot of people would have realized that it was him before he revealed himself. I mean, the killer line, of course, from Brodie Lee was, he said this to Chris Daniels, but we know who he was really aiming these words at, directing this message at. Brodie Lee said, "Chris Daniels, you are not the first out of touch old man not to believe in me." And, you know, we know who he was really referring to there.
Triple H.
Triple H. yes. Triple H. So, yeah, that was interesting. And it's, I mean, I'm not really a fan of the Dark Order. I mean, we've talked about them before. I'm not quite sure how this is going to work long term. But I think as a short term thing, it's not a bad gig for him. But I mean, long term, I'm not really convinced that the Dark Order is really a force to be reckoned with. What do you think, Kenny?
I mean, I like Brodie Lee, aka Luke Harper. I mean, this is the thing that's a shame for him is that I like elements of the Dark Order act. Like, I like the vignettes and I like the kind of, you know, them doing the ads for like, join us and all that kind of stuff. I like that. I just don't particularly like the two wrestlers that are in the Dark Order. You know, I think Evil Uno looks like a bag of shite. Yeah. I just think he just looks like Poundland. And that's nothing to do with the guy or he seems like a perfectly average or decent wrestler, but just the presentation of the aesthetic just looks so bush league.
Yeah, I mean, how can you take somebody who looks like a bin bag full of bitch seriously?
You cut off there, a bin bag full of what?
Bin bag full of porridge.
Bin bag full of porridge. I mean, you can't take that seriously, Finn. You can't. But the thing that's going to be, I guess, in some ways good for Brodie Lee and in some ways bad is that, you know, for all the people who have been championing him for years, saying, you know, this guy's got what it takes and this guy's going to be a top guy, well, not only is he now going to have to prove that, but he's also going to have to prove it by carrying the Dark Order as well. But I tell you what, I did think when I was... I mean, I enjoyed it. I think that he's definitely going to make me have more tolerance for the Dark Order for a while, so hopefully that will lead to better things. But the one thing coming out of it that I think was just so clear by the end of that episode was that, you know, when Matt Hardy came out, he felt epic. He felt like he should be in that 10-man blood and guts cage match. And I think it just was such a smart move to sort of like tease that he might be in the Dark Order, but in reality, he is kind of too big for that, and he absolutely should have been utilized in the way that he was instead.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, with Brodie Lee and the Dark Order, I mean, after they lose their first match that he's a participant in, he fire members of the Dark Order and recruit new members. I mean, if they want to continue with this storyline with these characters, then they just need some decent talent, some talent that's perhaps not at his level, but nearer his level, that can make this thing work. But you're right. I mean, the wrestlers who are currently there, they're not convincing. They've got no credibility. And bringing him in, and yeah, there's a lot of goodwill towards him now. And as you said, Kenny, there's a lot of people who are saying, this guy's, oh, he'll show you, he'll prove you wrong. And he feels to me like a guy that's going in there who's got a purpose. You know, he's coming in there sure-footed. You know, this is it. It's finally happening for me, or at least, you know, first time in sort of 6 years since the Wyatt family was at its peak. It feels like I'm going somewhere and I'm on the right course towards success. But he needs some people around him that are going to prop him up, that are going to support him, and that are worthy of him as well, are worthy of being in his orbit. So I think it's up to AEW really here to not squander this guy that they've got. They need give him some people that he can work with and that he can elevate and that can become stars. I don't think the people currently in the Dark Order can. I hope they can. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I mean, they haven't done so far. They've been there quite a while now. We're now coming up nearly 6 months into the AEW Dynamite.
October 2nd,
it launched, so premiered. So we're nearly 6 months into, you know, weekly episodes of Dynamite. So he needs people around him that are worthy of him and that he can he can bring up to his level, or at least try to. As far as Matt Hardy goes, yeah, I'm with you. He shouldn't have. He's not. I mean, he couldn't have played the broken Matt Hardy character as the exalted one, could he? It just wasn't going to work. They were incompatible, weren't they? Those two, you know, they couldn't really mesh.
It would have limited the I mean, because the thing, I mean, he was on Jericho's podcast this past week. It's well worth a listen, actually. And he talks a lot about how, you know, he had all these ideas. And I know he talked to, you know, I think I mentioned on the podcast last week that he'd said to Mike Johnson that him and Bray Wyatt got taken off TV because they kept giving ideas. And one of the ideas that he had, which I actually think is genius, is remember when Bray Wyatt lost to Randy Orton at WrestleMania and he lost his Wyatt family?
Yeah.
That Matt's idea was, is that Bray Wyatt would come to the Hardy compound, basically like homeless and with like, you know, like I can't remember if it was like a broomstick. It was like he'd have something like as a friend. It was like his Wilson from Castaway kind of thing. And he would basically like start working at the Hardy compound and like doing tasks for Senior Benjamin. And then like through all these kind of vignettes, through months and months and months, Wyatt and Hardy would form this team. And then eventually they would come back and they'd be a big thing. And I think if you'd left them to that and just said, look, you guys do some stuff, send it in every week, and if it's good, we'll use it. If you did that for 6 months, there probably would be some really funny stuff in there based off of what Hardy did in Impact with the broken stuff. So I think the broken stuff is so... like, there's so much you can do with it even now in 2020, and that's, you know, it was in its prime 4 years ago, that if he was in the Dark Order as the Exalted One, it would definitely limit a lot of the potential stuff that he could do as broken Matt Hardy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean... so that was they did the right thing, booking him in the way they did. He's somebody that's going to team with the Elite members, as you say, against the Inner Circle members when the double ring cage match finally happens. So yeah, Matt was there in full broken Matt Hardy mode, you know, with the hair and the outfit, you know, and the delete symbols and the, it's just everything really, the whole character that he developed and perfected in Impact Wrestling in 2016 is back. So, I mean, it was never really given a chance in WWE. He stated, I read the transcript of quite a lot of Matt Hardy's podcast appearance with Chris Jericho, and he was saying Vince just didn't get it. He just did not understand the character. And that was not surprising to me at all. And in fact, when I did that with Matt Hardy in 2016, before he even signed with WWE, I said to him, don't you think that Vince will filter out all the goodness from this character? And Matt was just kind of like awkwardly was, oh, well, if he does that, I'll just have to delete his ass. And it's like Matt kind of knew that it was going to happen. He signed up with WWE anyway because the money was too good for him to turn down. So I understood why he did it. But creatively, it was obviously a massive misstep for him. I mean, he obviously had that WrestleMania moment in 2017, but it fell off a cliff fairly quickly after that. And the whole, you know, Woken business and the team with Bray Wyatt, to me, was just a huge flop. And there was a couple of little moments there, but it was
He did get to... I mean, the one big thing that he got to do that I think is worth noting is he did get to do a deletion match as the main event segment of a Raw.
He didn't mean anything and it didn't go anywhere. And to me, it was just, I mean, I can't even remember that. I mean, I know it happened. I remember writing about it at the time. Did some on my website at the time about it.
I mean, the booking was bad. I'm just saying from his perspective, I think that the fact that he was able to get that out is a testament to him. That he was able to get that out there. And I think even he was saying on the Jericho podcast that, like, that main event thing he did with Wyatt, like, had over 3 million viewers.
Yeah.
And, like, now they'd kill for 3 million viewers in a main event segment. But, yeah, I know, you're absolutely right. You know, when he got to WWE, there was the whole thing that Anthem owned the broken stuff, so they couldn't use it for 6 months. And that was probably just, like, you know, all Vince needed to kind of say, well, let's not do it. And then, you know, they did the Woken thing, and that was just so watered down. It was just a shame for him.
In a sense, it was a shame for him. But on the other hand, it was naive of him to think that Vince was going to embrace a character that was that out there, that was Matt's invention. And I think for him to actually try and tell me that this was going to happen, come on, Matt, you know, I've been doing this long enough to know the way Vince McMahon's mind works. And there was just no way he was going to embrace that. I knew he wasn't going to. And I think Matt knew it well. And when they came in at WrestleMania in 2017, they weren't, there was no way they were coming in as these characters that had been on Impact Wrestling each week before a much smaller audience. They had to come in effectively as a nostalgia act because that's what was going to get the huge pop. And it did on the night. Absolutely, it was enormous. It was one of the biggest stories from WrestleMania that year. So they had to come in as characters that people recognized. But, you know, now I think someone, one of the questions someone asked him, I think it was on Twitter, actually, why didn't you go to NXT? You know, you could have had creative control there. And he was basically saying, well, AEW's paying me more money for fewer dates. And even in NXT, it's the same person ultimately who's in charge. So would I really have that same freedom of expression, creative freedom of expression? Of course he wouldn't have done. So I think had he gone to NXT, it would have just been more frustration for him and his fans. So he's made absolutely the right decision going to AEW. I don't think he really, I understand why he went back to WWE. You know, he's got, I think he's got three kids now, hasn't he? Matt's got three
kids.
Yes,
he does, yeah.
So, I mean, it was 3 years of really good money. At this point in his life, he's obviously got some physical problems from wrestling. I absolutely don't blame him for taking the money. In his position, I'm sure I would have done the same thing.
I mean, he has got himself in decent shape in the last kind of year or so, I've noticed. Yeah. That, like, I mean, yeah. You can tell he was basically, like, you know, when he was asleep at night, he was like, you know, threatening to break out of Shawshank at any moment, and it was going to come because he was going to leave. So my question to you was going to be, obviously in AEW he's not going to be someone who's wrestling, you know, three times a week or anything like that. It is a light schedule. He's 45, but then again Jericho's 49 now, I think, and is on, you know, is doing a lot of big stuff. Do you think that over the next couple of years that Broken Matt Hardy can have a really good run in AEW? Do you think that he's going to be a big character? Like, do you think that this run can kind of reach the heights of the original Broken stuff that he did in 2016? Do you think that's possible to sort of reignite that flair?
I think so, yeah. I think it is. And actually, the current circumstances that we find ourselves in with this, you know, lockdown will be advantageous for Matt, because it means that he's going to be able to film a lot of stuff from the Hardy compound where an audience is not required. So this is actually good timing for him. When you think about it, there's going to be an emphasis, I would think, partly because he's just come in, partly because they need to sort of undo the stigma that he really has joined AEW with from his dismal sort of tenure in WWE, certainly over the last sort of year to 18 months. I mean, they kind of got to rebuild him. I mean, in some ways, joining a new company, the slate is kind of wiped clean. But I think when you've got a bit of a stigma attached to you as a jobber or as a character that's not really a star, that damage has got to be repaired. Same applies to Brody Lee, actually. I mean, it's all right, it's me and you and lots of other people out there saying, oh, this guy could be a huge star. But to a mass audience, they're probably going to view him as a guy who was, you know, a second or, you know, third string player behind Bray Wyatt, who himself was, you know, mid-card player for a long time in WWE after the Wyatt family had had its original really hot run in 2014. So, I mean, for Brody Lee, there's a lot of work to do as well. For him to sort of be rehabilitated in the minds and the hearts and the minds of a mass audience. I think the same applies to Matt. I think with the broken Matt stuff from the Hardy compound, I remember that from TV wrestling in 2016, but a lot of people probably won't have seen that. So he can probably repeat a lot of it, not directly, but just sort of use a lot of that material, you know, to maybe change it a little bit, and it will be original to many of the viewers each week. So I think he's in an excellent position right now, given where we're at. And I would think that there's going to be quite a lot of material being beamed from the Hardy compound to AEW Dynamite on TNT each week. That's, if I was him, that's what I would do. I mean, I was a fan of Broken Matt and Jeff and Senior Benjamin and all the other characters that came and went. I thought it was just in stuff. Lots of people just mocked it. A lot of people didn't get it. And then a lot of people sort of like retrospectively became fans of it when they realized that lots of people were really into it. Like, oh, yeah, I was a fan of that all along. No, you weren't. You were trashing that 4 weeks ago. Don't tell me, or 6 weeks ago, or 2 months ago. Don't tell me you were a fan of it all along.
So, I remember being at What Culture, and Adam Blompie, Adam Pacitti, Sam and Jack, they all just slated it. They were like, you know, they did like a viewing party where they all just sat and like, sort of just were like, ugh, you know, this is rubbish. And, you know, then they kind of found themselves in this corner of like, you know, everybody loved it.
You're out of touch, lads.
And they were, in that instance, they were, because it was just so clever. And like, you know, when he became a carpenter, when he'd lost his, you know, he'd lost his marbles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he was from amnesia, couldn't remember anything. And then he was having his ice cream social and he was wearing all the jumpers. I mean, that's probably where, you know, Bray Wyatt's, you know, Matalan, you know, Walmart jumper thing came from. Yeah. Probably inspired by Matt when he was suffering from amnesia. And there was so much mileage in that. It was so great.
And the thing that, you know, when on Dynamite, because I was watching Dynamite Live last week, and maybe I'm in the minority, but I'd kind of, by the end of the show when I was watching the main event, I'd kind of forgotten about Matt. And I thought, it never occurred to me he was going to be involved. I actually thought that Dustin Rhodes was going to be the fifth member of the War Games match. So I was like, oh, well, you know, I just kind of put it out of my mind. And then when that Vanguard 2.0, I think it is, because the first one got destroyed.
Yeah.
When Vanguard 2.0 came down and Jericho sold it, like, you know, Jericho deserves credit for the sale that he did on that, because he sold that as like, oh, shit, what have we gotten ourselves into? And then Matt Hardy's up there, you know, looking like he's the king of the castle and all that kind of stuff. And it's a testament to AEW that they were just going to go, do you know what? We believe in this and what this character is. We believe in it. We're just going to present it as top tier from moment one, and that's it. And then I think WWE, in some ways, actually did Matt a favor by having him a month ago cut that great promo on Raw, so that he kind of got into people's consciousness again. You know, because that people, you know, remember that promo. I mean, they also remember the kind of crap beatdown the following week. But, you know, they remember the big promo that he got. And it almost in some ways was like them doing that did the opposite of trying to job him out in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They've committed to this. Apparently they're paying him a lot of money. I know what this guy can do. Back to 2016, there was like actual satire in some of those segments. We don't get enough of that in wrestling. And like, they were there, the Halloween special. Go back and watch that. It's probably on YouTube, all the highlights from the Halloween special. Just hilarious. And Jeff was great as well in that, with all these various characters. And Jeff's not really renowned for his promos or his character work. And he was a barrel of laughs in that. And all the moving parts just so well. There was very few misses in the whole Hardy thing. And like, just at that time, you know, he's walking, you know, the dilapidated boats. What was that one when he's walking? He's going looking for, was it Vanguard 1? And he's walking across the Hardy compound and he goes, what is this decrepit erection? And he's like, double entendre. And it was just like knackered old shed, you know? It was just like, and it was just really funny. Like, you know, that's really funny. It's almost like something out of a 1970s Carry On movie or something. You know?
Yeah, Ooh Matron, yeah. Yeah.
You know, would mean nothing to anyone who's not from the UK, the Carry On reference, and extremely dated. But it was like this sort of double entendre. You're just like, oh, fantastic. It's just this humour that actually is funny and felt spontaneous and real and not forced and not rewritten endlessly to the point where all the goodness has been stripped from it, which is, you know, WWE program. Not all of it, but quite a lot of it, as we've seen.
And even like, you know, it's going sparring with Smoking Joe Frazier or George Washington. Was George Washington the kangaroo? I can't remember what the kangaroo's name was, but anyway, he would have so many bits and pieces he would do. They were so inventive. And, you know, he now we've got a whole new, you know, take on it. He's got the red streak in the hair now, and you know, he's Damascus is one of the things that he's quoting now. So I'm looking forward to it. And like you say, I mean, if AEW has got Hardy compound skits for the next 12 weeks, then sign me up.
I think it's gonna have Hardy compound skits because that fills up time where you don't need the audience, and it's just perfect content. You can record it in advance, so that makes it easy as well. And it just makes, you know, and they're going to be saying to Matt, what have you got? And I bet Matt's got so much material just ready to go. He's probably got it all mapped out for the next 12 weeks, knowing him. And he's not going to have anyone filtering out the goodness from it, which is obviously what was going to happen in WWE. So, you know, good for him, you know, arriving in AEW. He left WWE, wasn't bitter. There was none of that. He left on really good terms. Like when he went in, I think it was 2010, wasn't it? He left, and that was all a big mess when he went back then. So he, you know, he went back, kind of redeemed himself, really just paid his debt to that company. And I think he was quite embarrassed by his behavior when he was there the last time around, 2010. So I think he felt like he had, you know, in a sense, apologies, and he had some making up to do, some atonement. And I feel like he fulfilled his obligations to that company. And he's come out of WWE. And I think he's raring to go again. You said earlier he's not going to wrestle on a regular basis. I'm sure he won't. I'm sure his matches will be very few and far between. He'll only wrestle sparingly. And so he should at this point in his career. Because, as you said, Chris Jericho is like 4 years older than him. But I think Matt's got like a lot of problems with his back. So he's only going to wrestle when it really matters. And that's, you know, really good for him at this point in his life.
So let's move on to SmackDown and Raw to discuss those shows. On SmackDown, we open the show with Rob Gronkowski. And he is coming out. He's introduced by Mojo Rawley, who looks like he's went to fancy dress shop and bought a 70s party outfit. It looks like an absolute moron.
I bet that suit belongs to him. I bet he's bought that suit. He probably had it. I mean, given the size of him, he probably was made to measure. Probably cost him a fortune.
I didn't think it was possible for him to go further down in my estimation, but here we go, even further. So they introduce the host of WrestleMania, Rob Gronkowski. And Rob Gronkowski comes out in a smart suit trousers, smart shoes, a suit jacket, and a Gronk Mania t-shirt. He then proceeds to, I mean, you could call it dancing. I don't know what I would call it. He looks like his head is not attached to his body. He does a very weird dance thing. He comes down. He then tries to hump the ring post. Michael Cole has to, you know, act like this is like the best thing ever. Mojo is just ecstatic because this means he gets a little bit of a push. And then they have to have this really contrived conversation where, like, Cole's like, hey, you know, did you ever think you'd be here? And he's like, I used to be in the stands when I was in second grade. And I went to FCW to support Mojo Rawley. So I saw your entrance, mate. You look like you should have been opening FCW in the opening match. And then this brings out Corbin. And then, I said this to Sondra on the overrun, but I wanted to say it here as well because it deserves to be repeated. And one of our listeners had actually tweeted this to me, and I thought it was worth repeating. It was Devesh had said, "Let me find it." He was comparing WrestleMania hosts and what different WrestleMania hosts have accomplished over the years, and what he said was, "Let's break down the WrestleMania hosts. The Rock comes back and starts a mega feud with Cena. Hogan." Brings out Rock and Austin. New Day brings back the Hardys. Alexa Bliss snaps her fingers and produces Hogan. Gronk makes Elias versus Baron Corbin for WrestleMania. That's his contribution to pro wrestling. So, I mean, when you were writing PowerSlam, you were covering Lawrence Taylor being involved in WWF, yes. Mike Tyson, Dennis Rodman in WCW, all these people. I mean, to me, if you don't, I know there's a lot of NFL fans in the US. If you're listening to this and you're from
America, Kenny, don't forget about Burt Reynolds at WrestleMania 10.
I mean, Burt Reynolds at WrestleMania 10 was fucking Brando compared to this Muppet. Oh my god! And then
he came out with like a big cast on his hand, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He still looked like a boss. Looked like an absolute boss. But like the thing here was, we've obviously got a lot of American listeners, so I'm sure if you're American, I know Rob Gronkowski is a huge deal in the States, right? I know he is. If you did not know that he was a huge deal, this segment was just so bad. And he was so bad. Like, it just... Am I out of touch here, or was this terrible? Finn... explain to me why we have to sit, you know, in a time where we're all looking for more entertainment, we were given this.
We're looking for a sign, aren't we? And instead we got Rob Gronkowski. I mean, I remember him from WrestleMania, was it 2 years ago or 3 years
Funnily
ago?
Funnily enough, it was 33, the one that Matt Hardy returned at WrestleMania in Orlando when during the Battle Royal.
That's right, and he ran in and nailed Jinder, didn't he? Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, because he helped Mojo win the Battle Royal.
That's right, and then Mojo ended up doing nothing after that in classic WWE fashion.
No, wait a minute. I do have to call shade on that a little bit. Mojo did carry the huge Andre the Giant trophy around for about a month to various tapings, and then he did nothing.
All right, okay. Well, thanks for correcting me there, Ken. Thanks for putting me straight. I would never have slept tonight. I would have been beating myself up. So, yeah, I know Rob Gronkowski, I'm not interested in American football. I understand lots of people are, and that in America he's a huge deal. He means nothing to me. I mean, to hear he came across as a hyperactive eight-year-old. The only winner here really seems to be Mojo, from what I can work out, because he is now associated with Gronk. Presumably Gronk has insisted that his buddy is part of this storyline. I don't know. I mean, at least, you know, he hasn't thrown him under the bus. I mean, Gronk probably knows enough to know that Mojo is a total nobody. You know, and in a typical style, she's like, who's this loser? You know, I'm not hanging around with you to drag me down. I mean, at least he hasn't turned his back on Mojo. So, I mean, he does have some good qualities. Let's compliment him for that. He's a good friend.
He has one good quality.
He's a good friend. You know, Kenny, you and I both, we have good friends. Or at least we like to think we have.
We are good friends.
No, I mean other people that we know.
Okay.
Right? But there isn't anyone I know who, apart from you, of course, Kenny, and of course you are a good friend of mine, that I would suggest could host WrestleMania. So being a good friend does not qualify one to be the host of WrestleMania. it was just like this. It was almost like a school playground level comedy, wasn't it, with Gronk and Mojo? And then King Corbin came out. And he was quite amusing. You know, he just came out and he's just like irritated, bored and irritated by these two stupid children who are misbehaving. You know, what are you doing? And then like straight out of the school playground, who was it who pushed? It was Elias came out to mock Corbin. And then who was it who kneeled down? And then they pushed Corbin.
Did Mojo not kneel down so that Gronk could push Corbin over?
That's right. Yes, absolutely. So, and then after that, Corbin's there reeling to, he's at ringside, he's upset. And then Gronk announces that, you know, he can't make matches at WrestleMania, but he's advocating a match between Elias and King Corbin at WrestleMania. So that really was the only contribution to WrestleMania from this segment, you know, apart from, you know, sucking the life out of all of us that we had to watch these two idiots, you know, behave like, you know, 8 year olds.
Well, but then
there are too many E numbers in the suites. That's what I think they had.
But they had something. But once they'd made the match, or whatever, and then, you know, poor Elias has to stand in the ring as these two have a dance that just it felt like I was watching two people have an epileptic attack. It didn't look, and they're just like, I was watching it just going, is this what's cool? And I'm just like not getting it. Like, it just was so crap.
It was just crap. And then, like, not cool.
And I mean, this is the second big celeb appearance that's happened in WWE in the last 6 months, the last one being Tyson Fury, that I was just like, yeah, these guys might be massive names, but they're not connecting. You know, the biggest performance that Tyson Fury had that connected was when he was in Manchester talking to his home country. You know, and people, you know, love him because he's from there, and that's fine. Or maybe there was that first appearance where he had a suit that was like, you know, what you'd imagine like a porcelain dish to look like. But that's about it. You know, and then because when he had that match with Braun Strowman in Saudi Arabia, I feel like genuinely, if you and I had 6 weeks training, we could do a similar level of match. It was so basic. It was so nothing. And now Gronk's coming in, and you know the talk is he's going to have a match later on this year. I mean, the only thing that I will say this: if they turn into like heel frat boys, then it could be good. But as long as it's meant to be, we're just having fun. Then yeah, it's probably not going to be for me.
Yeah, I mean, if they are sent, but there again, you know, they're going to be paying Gronk too much money for him to be a comedy act. You know, he can't be the equivalent of Johnny Swinger and Glenn Gilberti in Impact Wrestling, surely, which is the role I've just mentioned before that Swinger plays, is this out of touch 80s wrestler who does all these things that were kind of tolerated in the 80s, but are considered totally unacceptable in 2020. And he's mocked and fails and loses and gets his comeuppance week after week, as he should. I mean, if you're going to have Gronk and Mojo as these two juvenile, infantile frat boys, I mean, you know, how much money is Gronk going to be paid? He's going to be paid a lot of money. He can't be effectively playing a comedy character, surely. And that's what these two are. They're like clowns, like stupid kids just misbehaving. And I thought Corbin actually was really funny here. And I thought it was as if Corbin had finally found his forte. In a sense, he hasn't, because that feud with Roman Reigns, even though it did go on too long, there were elements of that where I thought he was really good. And this is obviously a massive demotion for him. I think he deserves to be a little bit further up the food chain than taking pratfalls in silly angles with Mojo and Gronk. But I mean, he was quite funny here, where he was just kind of capturing the mood of the nation, Kenny, of you and I. It's like, oh, God, who are these two guys? What are they doing here? You know, could somebody like, you know, somebody, I don't know, somebody give them an Xbox 360, you know, send them on the way, you know, that'll keep them entertaining.
I tell you who deserves a bonus, though, for this episode, right?
Who's that?
Michael Cole. Because when he had to, like, look so enthusiastic at Gronk's shite dancing and be like so happy that Gronk has come to WrestleMania, if you can act enthusiastic about that, you deserve a raise. You deserve it, Michael. Just give him a wee grand or something for showing enthusiasm. Because I would have really struggled.
Maybe Michael Cole's like a big NFL fan, and if he is, he may be a mark for Gronk, as I'm sure lots of people in WWE are, because he was a huge star. But because he means absolutely nothing to me, because I don't watch the NFL, he might as well be the somebody who works at Chippy down the street, quite frankly. In fact, the guy serving the fish and chips down the street is probably more over with me than Gronk is, because at least he serves a purpose that makes my life better. Gronk is just dragging it down. He's just making it worse. You know what I mean? At least he provides a function that enhances the life of one F. Martin. I mean, at least...
Well, you say that, you won't be getting your fish and chips for a while. You're going to be making them at home.
Exactly, unless they have social distancing, you know, one in, one out type thing at the Chippy. I mean, I think they are still opening takeaways, aren't they? I mean, you know about that, Kenny. You live on takeaways.
Quite rude, quite nasty. But, there's a Chippy just down the road from me called if you're in Glasgow, it's beside the Oranmore in the West End. It's called the 727, Great Chippy. And I went there the other night to get some chips, and the guy said, oh yeah, we're going to have to close for a while. Or we're going to have to really shorten our hours, because if all the pubs aren't open, which is where all their clientele comes from, then there's not really much point in them being open.
No.
So, but anyway, we're in agreement, Gronk's rubbish. And I mean, what is he going to do in the night? You know, or the two nights? You know, he's going to be there, it's too big for one night. But anyway, the hilarity on SmackDown did not end there. It did not end there.
No.
Paige has turned up on Skype because she wants to deliver a message to Bayley. Bayley, who comes out with Sasha Banks, and that is to tell Bayley what she's going to be doing at WrestleMania. Bayley basically said that she was going to take the night off, and Paige said, "No, I think you're going to face, the sassy Southern Belle Lacey Evans, and you're also going to face, Dana Brooke. Yeah, you're going to face Dana Brooke. You're going to face Tamina, who has not won a singles match in 2 years." But you know what? Fuck it. Everyone's invited. It's WrestleMania. It's too big for one night. Naomi, chuck her in there.
How many women have they got in the system that would have, like...
excelled?
That could have been... Why not just, like, put some new people in here? You know, give them a chance.
Put
Shotzi
Blackheart in there. People say she's really good. Put her in there. Put Shotzi Blackheart in there. You know, a lot of people talk about her from the indies. She's in NXT. She's got a little tank and stuff. She's got her green hair.
Yeah, Shotzi, she looks great. She's a bit rough around the edges, is Shotzi, and they've kind of given up on her in NXT from what I can work out.
Let's ask a better question. Who's more rough around the edges, Shotzi Blackheart or Tamina Snuka?
Well, you know, to answer the question, I'd rather see Shotzi Blackheart in that spot than Tamina. I mean, I'd rather see a cardboard cutout in that Tamina. Let's be honest.
Poor Tam.
You know what I mean? And the fact that they're having to bring in Tamina, I mean, is What's-Her-Name not ready yet? I mean, she's been out now for a year, hasn't she?
Who's What's-Her-Name? Or Nia Jax?
Nia Jax.
What's-Her-Name? Quite rude, Finn. Do you know what I mean? You've only written a fucking magazine for the better part of 30 years, and now you're reduced to What's-Her-Name?
Yeah, well, I could look stuff up when I was doing the magazine. I didn't have to know how to pronounce anything, you know? And this is why there's certain names and certain things I can't say on this podcast because I know I'll screw it up. And well, obviously, screwed the Nia Jax thing up as well there. Nia Jax, she's been out a year, hasn't she? I know she had, was it double knee surgery? I think it was. I mean, that must have been a hell of a thing to come back from.
And she's ready, apparently. She is cleared and good to go. They're just waiting for a storyline for her.
Well, why not bring her back in this, for God's sake?
You're preaching to the choir here, pal. I'm not advocating Tamina Snuka. And the whole end bit is that Paige puts Sasha in as well, and Sasha's kind of secretly happy that she's in the match, whatever. We should mention that updated Dana Brooke is not going to be in the match because she's now in quarantine because I don't know, she's got coronavirus-like symptoms or something. So, you know, all joking aside, as much as we could joke about Dana Brooke being in the match, it is better to have her sort of take care of herself. And
sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, look, Dana, you know, if you want a big moment in wrestling, being the first one eliminated in a six-pack challenge with Tamina on an empty WrestleMania, it's probably not going to be on your CV, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't winning anyway, Dana, was she? It doesn't really matter.
It was, am I going out first or second in this elimination match?
Maybe they could follow our advice, our recommendation, and insert Nia Jax into this vacant spot in the match.
Why not? It would make sense.
It would.
And then the other big talking point from SmackDown, I guess, was the main event of SmackDown was Roman Reigns and Goldberg doing a contract signing, where it's funny because Sam Driver, who I used to work with at What Culture, he had written like a funny tweet or something in January about, oh, isn't it cute that Roman Reigns punches his wee pad when he does his entrance? And then somebody tweeted Roman about it, and that was when Roman responded with the tweet that they showed on the screen on SmackDown. Obviously, they framed it differently, but, you know...
I found it bizarre that they would choose to acknowledge that on TV.
Yeah, well,
would they?
I guess because luckily he'd made the jab at Goldberg, so they decided to use it.
I mean, remember when Sin Cara used to make his entrance and have the little trampoline set up? I don't think they ever showed us that, did they?
Well, you could see it sometimes.
You could see it sometimes. We weren't supposed to see it. It was supposed to be this illusion of, how does this guy get in the ring? He must be a superhero.
No, mate, it's a trampoline. We know.
So why tell us Roman Reigns punches a bit of foam? We're supposed to think that. I mean, why do that? Are we supposed to believe that, you know, he's stronger than steel, you know? So I didn't understand why they brought that up. I guess it was something we could work in with, you know, Goldberg smashing his head against lockers in the backstage area. So, I mean, that was kind of worked into the fighting talk, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, but rather, you know, because rather than us saying, you know, Roman and Goldberg, it's not going to work very well in front of a crowd, or rather than us knocking it, I'm going to try and just come up with something else. So, Roman and Goldberg have this segment, contract signing. If you were given the... If you were given that match, you know, somebody said, right, Finn, Roman and Goldberg, it's happening at WrestleMania in an empty arena, what would you do to maximise the match? Like, what? How do you think they should book it? What's the best way to do it to come out of it in a good place?
Well, I would say that there should be lots of movement in it, but the problem is we've got this Boneyard match that they've announced, which presumably is going to be pre-taped, although I could be wrong about that. We've got the Last Man Standing match, and I would think there's going to be lots of brawling around the arena in that. But
we should note that the Boneyard match, which we'll get to in the overrun when we talk about Raw, but the Boneyard match and the Boneyard match is on night one.
Yeah.
And I think the Last Man Stand match is on night two. So Roman and Goldberg is on the night the same one as the Last Man Standing.
Okay, so they're going to want it to be different to Orton versus Edge, which I think will have a lot of fighting around the arena. But with Reigns and Goldberg, I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, the match itself does not really excite me because Goldberg has not proven that he can go more than a few minutes without screwing something up, blowing up or knocking himself out. So, I mean, the longer it goes for, the greater the likelihood is that the match is going to fall apart, you know, and they're not going to be able to put it back together. But I would recommend that they try and come up with some devices to fill time and don't just do spear versus spear. I mean, one way around it, of course, is because there's not going to be an audience there, or at least not a normal audience. Maybe they'll have an audience comprising members of staff and wrestlers who will react in the right way. It means that they're not going to have to deal with a lot of boos. So that's one good thing about it. So they're not going to be up against that. As I said earlier in the podcast, the fact that there's not going to be a regular audience there could be advantageous for Goldberg and Roman Reigns, because I think those two would have been booed out of the building. I think they would have had a terrible time in Raymond James Stadium had it taken place as scheduled at the big stadium. But yeah, I think they sort of need to do something more than just their regular match. There either needs to be a lot of add-ons, a lot of extras, or they just need to make it really quick. And they kind of need to really go at it, like really hard and heavy for about 2 minutes, and then have them selling massively. They could do that where the pair of them are really selling and they could really lay it on thick on the commentary. Oh, these two guys have gone at it harder than anyone ever in the history of WWE, or maybe throwing each other into the post, or maybe they could do the spear. They've just done it on SmackDown, haven't they, with when Otis ran amok, where he smashed things up. If they hadn't done that quite recently, maybe they could have done that spot that they like to do where they have someone spearing someone else through the barrier. Maybe they could have done that and have them end up in a load of wreckage on top of them. And then when they went to the ring, they could have both been selling and just gone home early, so the match didn't go too long. I realise that I have offered no clarity at all. And it's a bit jumbled bloody mess of ideas there. But I had no idea you were going to ask this.
But the thing is, I actually think this is going to be one of the matches that really would have benefited from being in Raymond James Stadium. Because I think they could have put together a high octane kind of 3-4 minute match that would have just been, you know, boom 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 done, and I think people would have been into it. But to do it with no, you know, Goldberg's matches have always been about crowd atmosphere, in every one that he's had. So to have no crowd is going to be very difficult. And I mean, one's got to believe. I'd be amazed if Goldberg retains the title. I would be amazed.
He's losing the title for sure. Absolutely, he's losing the title, and we won't see him again until he's, you know, maybe for another year or maybe not ever. But I can't agree with you there, Kenny, because whenever he appears in front of an audience or has done recently, I mean, I guess he was all right with Dolph Ziggler at some time. He got a decent reception there, but there have definitely been times in the past where people have booed him very loudly.
It's all because when he came out on that Raw before SummerSlam, you know, for the Ziggler thing, he got a massive pop, big pop when he faced Ziggler. The problem is that, you know, they had him come in and beat The Fiend, whoever they had loved for 6 months. That's why the reaction's not good. I think Goldberg, as a sort of like, you know, Heyman's Bruno kind of thing, was a good thing to use him for. Once a year or something, bring him in, have a big match with somebody, fine. But it's him coming in and killing a gimmick. You know, but I do think people would have probably cheered Roman over him. I think people would have wanted Roman to beat him. So I think in some way Vince would have probably got his wish from that. But I guess we'll never know now because it's going to be empty arena. But I don't think it's going to go more than 5 minutes. And I think it's going to be high energy.
I think they need to keep it short. Maybe just have some stunts outside the ring where, you know, they smash things down and there's tons of selling. But they cannot take any chances with Goldberg. Because I mean, he's not reliable. He's somebody that is not dependable in this type of situation. And I know Roman Reigns is. Roman Reigns is quite the opposite. He's one of the most dependable guys they've got. I mean, it's really hard to name a poor Roman Reigns in-ring performance, whether you like him or not. And okay, people aren't going to like his style and don't like his character, and I get that. But as an in-ring performer, he's very sure-footed, very precise, just never blows spots. Everything he does looks really snug, really tight, on target. You know, he never blows up. I mean, he doesn't have a reputation for hurting people. I mean, he's a really, you know, really proficient in-ring performer, in my opinion anyway. I'm sure most people do agree with that. So, I mean, I think he's somebody that will counteract a lot of Goldberg's flaws in his repertoire. But, as I said earlier, the longer the match goes, the greater the chance is that something will go wrong. And, you know, let's get this thing in there and let's get it out there. Let's get the belt and Roman Reigns. Let's get Goldberg back to the... Let's get rid of Goldberg again. He'll be leaving after WrestleMania. Let's just see what Roman Reigns can do as champ next time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Roman is great in the ring, and we'll see how it goes. Now, we're going to talk about Raw over in the Overrun. You can get that on Patreon at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We're also going to be talking about issue 125 of PowerSlam magazine with Booker T on the cover and the infamous Kid Cash interview, which we will be discussing in detail. So no better time to go over there and do that. But Finn, you are, you know, you're a great writer. You know, you've been doing it for the majority of your adult life. So... If you don't mind indulging me, I want to read you something. I want just you to give us your take as we finish the podcast. Is that okay with you?
Okay, fire away.
So WWE have announced that Aleister Black will be taking on Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania. Have you seen this? Okay.
Certainly have, yes.
So WWE.com have written a few paragraphs on why this match is taking place. So I want you to critique the explanation here and tell me if they have talked you into the match or if they haven't. Are you ready?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that somebody in the WWE system has done something to hype this match because they didn't do a very good job on Raw.
Well, here we go. This is what WWE.com says is the reasoning for Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley, and I'm keen to hear what you think.
Okay.
And I am not joking, ladies and gentlemen. This is on... I'm reading this word for word from the WWE website. Two superstars looking for a fight, a rivalry nobody saw coming, and one stage big enough to host it. In one of the most intriguing matchups of WrestleMania season, Aleister Black will go one-on-one with Bobby Lashley at this year's history-making edition of the Showcase of the Immortals. While the two have had little to no interaction of late, they make perfect sense as opponents. Black has made it clear in recent weeks that he's no longer willing to wait for fights to come to him, opting to seek out matches with anyone on Raw who's unwise enough to take them. Likewise, Lashley has reintroduced himself in a major way, transforming from wife-stealing Casanova to human wrecking machine in a matter of weeks as a way to bulldoze his way back into title contention. In other words, this match is a classic case of two people looking to make a statement, with each suddenly the other's biggest roadblock to the next level. And this is the last one, it's so good. And now, like the classic math problem, these two trains are on a collision course with WrestleMania as the shared destination. Sometimes, it's just that simple.
What a lot of inane cliches and banal metaphors.
So let's unpack a little bit of it, right? So
what a pile of shit!
Lashley has reintroduced himself in a major way, transforming from wife-stealing Casanova to human wrecking machine in a matter of weeks. Who is he wrecked?
I don't know, we haven't seen him for weeks.
So, and then my favourite, like the classic math problem, two trains on a collision course. How is that a math problem?
I don't know.
What is the problem?
How is it?
Oh my God, I just want to, just let me, one more time everybody, I just want to read this last paragraph one more time, it's so good. In other words, this match is a classic case of two people looking to make a statement, with each suddenly the other's roadblock to the next level, the other's biggest roadblock to the next level. And now, like the classic math problem, these two trains are on a collision course with WrestleMania as the shared destination. Sometimes it's just that simple.
Oh, I mean, it's just it. I mean, it's like as if someone has said, right, here's the brief. We want you to write the most boring, inane match preview imaginable. That's just filled with cliches. There's just nothing tangible there. There's no
substance.
There's no substance to anything. It's just a lot of words that don't mean anything. I don't know. I mean, it's. It's. I mean, if someone were to send something like that to me when I was running Powers, oh, yeah, this is what I've written, Finlay. Can I have a job? I would just wouldn't even respond. Or I would just write back with, I had like a stop letter I just send back. I'm sorry, we're not looking for any new writers at this time. Sometimes if you actually provided people with honest feedback, Kenny, they didn't like it. And then they would, like a vendetta would start, and they would start emailing you and trying to get in touch with you and just send you all this abuse. So sometimes it was easier to just sort of tell them that there were no jobs available rather than, listen, mate, your stuff's just not good enough. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, Vince always wants to be taken seriously, doesn't he? He wants people to think that wrestling is not what people think it is.
They want an Emmy.
Stereotype, yeah. And it's just like, what is this? It's just this, just a load of fluff that means nothing. But I mean, at the same time, what's going on TV? I mean, they didn't do anything at all. They announced on, Raw? Yeah, they announced on Raw this week, didn't they? That Aleister Black would face Lashley at WrestleMania, but didn't really give us anything to work with on the show. And Black just defeated the jobber really quickly. Lashley wasn't on the show. He could have recorded a promo that they could have aired, and they could have started something like that up, where afterwards Black was in the ring and then Lashley appeared on the big screen to just issue the challenge and come up with a reason why he wanted to defeat him in a match, rather than this reference to two trains being on the same track, and that's somehow the reason why they're having a match.
Sometimes, yeah, Finn, it's just that simple.
I mean, I feel for both of them. I really do. It's almost like a rib. That explanation, that match preview, is almost like adding insult to injury. I mean, Black and Lashley must just be sitting there thinking, what have we done to deserve this? You know, we've been like good soldiers. We've done everything the company has asked us to do. You know, and they give us this at WrestleMania and this match preview that's these words that are just not in any way applicable to us or our characters. What would have been more interesting would be had they actually done an interview. Say just got them. I mean, it's not like WWE.com is having going to have any great difficulty getting interviews with these guys. They're not on the road at the moment. They probably welcome the opportunity to talk about each other. Why not get them on the phone and just say, oh, well, we're having this match. What have you got to say about Bobby Lashley? And just come up with a story based on, you know, quotes about each other. And obviously with them saying, well, I respect him, but we're having this match and I've got a lot to prove. And try and come up with something original and something that's individual to them, you know, from them, rather than, as I said, a bunch of inane cliches that just don't amount to anything. It's not that difficult, Kenny. Just do, you know, just get them on the phone and it could be quite interesting. And it could actually make this match a hell of a lot more interesting and make us a lot more look forward to it a lot more than we are than that match preview has.
Well, you know, it used to be back in the day that WWF would run 3 house shows a night and like everybody was kind of a star. You know, so like Jim Duggan would be a top guy in some ways because he would headline house shows and depend where you were, where your city was. So sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Duggan would, he would replace Hogan in the smaller markets. Like Hogan would wrestle in Boston and Chicago and LA and and all these big market arenas, but he wouldn't go on the road in the smaller markets. So Jim Duggan would be kind of his stand-in. So Hogan's opponent. Sorry, Kenny, I just thought we'd throw that in.
Yeah, you know, so it's but I guess before, like, it used to be that you could, you know, you could put Jim Duggan versus the Honky Tonk Man as a match, and like it felt like a big match because they were both fairly big stars and whatever, and that would be fine. But nowadays, because WWE don't. They don't do as good a job at presenting people as stars consistently.
No.
That, you know, it, 10 years ago, if you'd have put, you know, Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley together, you could have just been like, let's just put that match out, and that's a big match, and then, you know, they can do a little interview, and it would be fine. But now it just, you know, there's so many shows, and there's so many matches, and people don't really have the sort of, you know, if you were to say to me, right, tell me the last, you know, Bobby Lashley turned up the night after WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans, tell me what he's done chronologically for the last 2 years. I probably would struggle a lot of the time to tell you what he did. Same with Aleister Black, who's been around for a year now. So I think that there's just times have changed, and now if you're going to put a match together, you kind of need to have something to get people to be invested. So
yeah, it needs some storyline support, and you know, fairs. They've got all these writers working for the company. And surely some of them must be idle, especially at the moment, because some Raw and SmackDown content is replays. So why not have them come up with something that's actually individual to those characters, that reflects those characters? I mean, I'm not a fan of Aleister Black. I don't think you're particularly a fan of Aleister Black either, are you, Kenny?
No, I'm not really.
I mean, I just find him kind of a bit dull, really. And part of that is because they haven't really fleshed out the character. I mean, he's obviously invested in the character. I mean, his entire body is covered in tattoos. So he is a guy who's absolutely committed to being this character. So I'm sure if you were to speak to him directly and ask him to come up with the reason why he was facing Lashley at WrestleMania, I bet he could come up with something. I absolutely think he could. And in the process, why some more about him? We still don't really know that much about Aleister Black, you know, apart from for a while he was waiting for people to knock on his door.
He was playing Chappie.
That's right, but now his patience has run thin and he's challenging people to fights. So, I mean, it's hardly very inspirational. I mean, it's hardly going to turn him into the next big thing, is it? And I imagine he sat there frustrated, you know, just as despairing as I am, at the lack of bloody effort that's gone into this match and the non-story behind it. So, yeah, I just think a big F for fail, or, you know, must try harder. I'm sorry, whoever came up with this, they wouldn't have got a job on PowerSlam, Kenny.
No, they would not. Well, listen, I do want to thank everybody who's listened. I want to also say, if you are listening to this and you enjoy what we do, please do go and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It allows us, the more reviews that we get, to move up the chain. More people can see our podcast when they select wrestling, which is always good for us. Also, thank you to people who have either pledged more or came back to pledge on Patreon. You know, I said this, I think, with Sondra, but, like, you know, now that there's no events running, you know, the only income for Inside the Ropes as a company is Patreon and YouTube. So, you know, we are really sort of dependent on that now. And if you are able to support us, that would be really good, you know, but we're not asking you for your support for nothing. We do offer a ton of content on Patreon, whether it's us offering this podcast 24 hours early, or Finn and I doing an overrun where we look back at old issues of Power Slam, or next week we're, you know, Sondra, Finn and I are doing a review of WrestleMania 2000. Finn yes. does articles, you know, what's going down articles and stuff like that, and we get Ollie and I review TNT, and Ollie and KJ do Pod of Thunder. There's weekly retro shows, so there's a ton of stuff on there. to make sure that you get your money's worth. And, you know, especially, I guess, right now, if you're not able to get out as much and you want some stuff to play in the house where you've got something going on, if you are able to support us, that would be great. But Finn, do you have any plugs before we leave?
No plugs, Ken. No plugs at all. I mean, you know, people on my Twitter, you know, you plugged Inside the Ropes, and, you know, I echo all those comments. And, yeah, really, you know, to everyone who has pledged to Inside the Ropes, we really do appreciate it. You know, and hopefully we're keeping you entertained during this very difficult time.
Yeah, and we will continue to do it. And we're going to, and, you know, next week, actually, we're going to either on the main podcast or the overrun. I don't know what yet, because we don't really know. You know, we never know what's going to be happening. But we are going to watch the Dark Side of the Ring premiere on the Chris Benoit story.
Yes.
So, it's, you know, everybody's talking about it. I might actually be grabbing Evan, I think it's Hunzi, who is the main producer of Dark Side of the Ring. I might be getting him for an interview later this week, so that would hopefully be something that we can do as well, which would be pretty interesting to talk to him. So yeah, a bit, you know, if you've got an idea of anything that you want us to do, other content that you would like to see us cover, you know, probably in April we're going to have to look at some other content, because there might not be weekly wrestling to watch. But yeah, we appreciate all your support. Thank you very much, Finn. I hope that you have been able in these dark times to keep your butler and your maid on staff. I know that they would appreciate it. If not, they can get the 80% pay from the government. But I hope that you enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you get up to.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always plenty of stuff to watch. There's always plenty of stuff to do. So I'm certainly not idle. And, you know, I hope people are managing to keep themselves entertained, and that we're at least a small part of that.
Exactly. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I said tonight.